American election, 2004. What would be best then, to go or stay? To cross the border, or once again, to dawdle and delay? It's true there's a fence, and men with helmets and guns have little patience with an uncertain stance or a scornful glance. Ah, and yet, every 4 years at this time, I wonder and shake my head and ask, how can it be? How can it be? On the street, the taxi's idle, waiting for a fare. It could be me, running my fingers through my hair. It would be better, perhaps, to buy maps of the world, all those pretty countries, rosy pink and forest green and pale blue, and lay them out on the floor, or tack them to the walls, a montage of roads that are not mined, and skies out of which no bombs fall. No one sitting, sweating in the waiting room of a clinic. No one uncertain how to pay the bill. But where would I go? Surely Bolivia is no better than Buffalo, Wyoming, nor Ecuador or the Dominican Republic. Maybe Norway. Those healthy and reasonable Norwegians in hand-knit sweaters with a government that guarantees health insurance and a people that pays taxes for the common good and are all Lutheran but don't much go to church. I could run up to them on the street and shout, "Just look at those fjords!" In winter, the smoke curls cheerfully up the chimneys, and in the not-quite-warm bedrooms, beautiful Norwegian women remove their sweaters to reveal icy Scandinavian perfection. Yes, I could live in Norway, in the cool bedrooms, burrowing under the covers, my face buried between Nordic breasts, my body warm. On the other hand, what if I find no Norwegian woman who wants me to bury my face between her breasts? What if my life in Norway is like my life here? Like in high school, when my girlfriend called and said, "Want to come to my house? There's no one home." And I, salivating, thinking, oh boy, do I ever, hopped in the car and drove to her house, ran up the steps to the front door, threw it open, and shouted, "I'm here!" While imagining the buttons and zippers to be undone. "I'm here!" I shouted again. "I'm here!" But there was no answer. There was, as she'd promised, no one home. How sad it can be in the far north as the nights grow long and one is alone. My car is buried in a snowbank, and even if I dig it out, I have no license. It was revoked for drunk driving, and I can't even walk to the post office and buy a stamp to write a letter home to my ex-girlfriend and tell her I don't mind the joke she pulled on me. I don't know the word in Norwegian for stamp, and I don't know how to say, "How much?" or, "Do you sell envelopes?" And where would I buy stationery? And it's impossible to use the phone because I can't speak to the operator to make the long-distance connection. And what if I'm trapped here forever, unable to speak Norwegian? All I can do is shrug and wag my head back and forth as if telling a waiter to keep the change. Keep the change! It's a beautiful country, but one day I'll run out of money. And then what? Homeless on the streets in a greasy coat, my hair matted, sleeping over a vent where steam rises and the Norwegian social service worker will come for me and put me in a group home where I'll make ashtrays from ceramic molds and have to attend group therapy in a language I can't understand. Maybe it won't be so bad. I'm told most Norwegians speak English better than I do. Either way, it might have been better to have never gone to Norway at all. On the street, the taxi's idle, waiting for a fare. It could be me, running my fingers through my hair. And God forbid I'd end my days in some gigantic city, Hong Kong, Tokyo, Jakarta, Kuala Lumpur, though I knew a Malaysian poet who loved the American Beat Generation poets, Allen Ginsberg and Lawrence Ferlinghetti and even Jack Kerouac, though he was more of a novelist than a poet and some people didn't even like his prose. Truman Capote, for example, when asked what he thought of Kerouac's writing, said, "That's not writing, it's typing." The Malaysian, while visiting the United States, found that he missed his wife. He wrote a poem about having a 6,000-mile-long penis that he would send home to her. But those are Asian cities I've never visited. I love walking the streets of Kinshasa, the fires burning in the gutters, the music playing from the bars, and the vendors in the market screaming and smiling and spitting and waving their arms, and when I make my offer, twisting their faces into such contorted masks of pain that I am ashamed. "Oh, please," I want to cry. Please, take twice what I offered. Three times what I offered. Take all the money I have and give it to your children. Buy them a chicken, or at least a dozen eggs, and not another 5 kilos of manioc out of which you will make gluey foo-foo that wears out your mouth and fills your belly while leaving you hungry. Imagine foo-foo for Christmas. The fires smell of eucalyptus leaves and plastic bags and tires. No, not even Kinshasa, a big city I love, is where I want to go. On the street, the taxis idle, waiting for a fare. It could be me, running my fingers through my hair. But I've been happy in cities. In Mexico, along the Reforma, where an angel looks down on us all, and the U.S. Embassy is gray concrete with a guard booth that has real glass behind a steel screen. And Paris! Who could say no to Paris? Where, on Independence Day night, the sky lights up with the history of the Republic told in music and fireworks, explosions that hurt no one, guillotines that melt into dainty clouds. Yes, Paris. That's worth the price of the maps. But the border here is with Canada, not France. And though they speak French in Quebec, Vancouver is rainy and cold and English. Though I should mention Stanley Park, the seawall, and when the sun shines, the people walking and rollerblading and playing soccer and swimming and eating. And there are so many of them, thousands, millions it seems, so there's no room to roam. But there is beauty everywhere, even in those nations we all know must be gotten rid of, Iran and Iraq and Korea. No, wait, only North Korea. South Korea is good and godly. And I could go there, but those bad nations, those axes of evil, those cruel and bloodthirsty monsters who want to take our Walmarts away and blow up our fast food restaurants and who hate us because we are free and hate freedom and want everyone to be in chains, dragging heavy iron balls like prisoners in hell and all want to strap bombs to their bodies and blow themselves up right along with us, those axes of evil. Of course, I can't live there. On the street, the taxi's idle, waiting for a fare. It could be me running my fingers through my hair. It's worth repeating that it rains on the British Columbia coast. It rains a lot, starts early and ends late. And what if I were there and found myself depressed and far from home, and I lost my job as a teacher of English to Chinese and Thai immigrants? How would I feel knowing I wasn't a real Canadian, even if I looked like I could be? Anybody can tell the difference between an American and a Canadian saying about. In such circumstances, unable to accurately pronounce the most ordinary of words, would I care who was winning elections back home? Home, that's the place. But I romanticize. And so, here I am in a long line at the Peace Arch border crossing where the flower beds are so carefully laid, the brilliant red, white, yellow, orange, violet, and blue. I'm surrounded by idling cars. The drivers have rolled down their windows, and the exhaust fumes pour into the cars as music from 1,000 CD players and radios pours out. Off to my left is the Pacific Ocean. It's low tide, so I can't see the water. And under an unseasonably hot sun, the mud begins to stink.